So we will start another talk about how to improve Python or how to use another language to improve Python. For example, we have C, C++, or Rust, and here that will be the case with NIM, another language trying to help Python. Let's go.
Thank you.
I know.
But I can speak loud if you want. Do I need to do? I need to switch it on?
Yes.
Okay. Or you can speak loud.
If you prefer,
yeah,
I can speak
not?
Louder. And there's no echo.
This one? Okay.
Yes.
Ah, wow. I'm loud now. So, thank you for being here.
Very happy to be here. So this will be talk about the fact that, let's say, 7 or more years ago, I was a Python consumer. I consumed part of the ecosystem. And something pushed me to get out there and do stuff and motivate and be part of the community and even try to contribute to the wider ecosystem. So it's actually a talk about becoming, in a way, a better Pythonista. And the takeaway for me is if you get inspired by doing something like that. For me, that thing has been NIM, but pick your one and do things. Code for the slides is on GitHub. So what is NIM? Is a programming language. And it's a systems programming language, which a working definition is a programming language on which you can write an operating system, for example. And it's a weird one at that because it doesn't use braces for indentation, and it uses white space for indentation, and which makes it kind of not unique, but there are few of those. It's also statically typed and compiled. So in these are two ways in which it's really different from Python. But it's also good for everything. So it does not have a specific use case. Some languages are born with something in mind. NIM, a bit like Python, is something that you can use pretty much for any use case. So a little bit about me before starting. I'm a data scientist. I will use maybe this as an excuse if you ask me hard computer science question. I work at Agile Lab, which is mainly a consultant in data engineering. One interesting thing is that we have a self-management system called Holacracy that I think is something that ties well with open source. And I'm also organizer of Python Milano and PyData Milano. If you want to pass from there, you want to give a talk, we try to organize 2 meetups every month. And I ran into 2018 on Hacker News on this blog post that didn't have even the name NIM on the title, and I find it interesting, you know, the romantic of being an underdog. It was a very nice blog post, and that's how it started. A good part of the work that I'm presenting here was done at Recurse Center, which is a retreat for curious and kind programmers. Very nice place. I did this at PyCon Italy, and again, please come to PyCon Italy at the end of May. We'll be there. So, I will first tell you what is NIM in a little bit more detail, and then I will try to explain you why it made me a better Pythonista, and we have blocked ads for you. Good. Thank you. Really, thank you. I don't know. What do I do now? Okay, yeah, it was just the tab. And then I'll tell you how also NIM affected the way that I relate to open source, and maybe create a project and start interacting with the community. So, NIM as a first approximation is an easy to learn and fast complement to Python as presented originality. It has very nice interoperability, and the killer feature, I would say, is metaprogramming. And it has another bunch of features. So the thing, the main selling point, at least at the beginning, is the fact that it's performant. So it compiles to native code, and it doesn't add overhead on a runtime or something like that. For me, the liberating fact is that you can write nested for loops. You can write a multiplication of matrix with three for loops, and it doesn't give you a hit in performance. You don't need always to reach to a library to do something performant. And that's very nice. And we actually had a dev room when FOSDEM was online, and there is a talk about this use case. But I will not talk a lot about the performant part, because one of the things that I like a lot is the syntax. So, which is also one of the things I like about Python, the readability part, the fact that you want to show code. And I will start with one thing which is sometimes a bit overlooked, and it's also a bit weird, not many languages have it, and it's one of the advantages of being statically typed. So if you have types and the compiler knows about type, it can do something like this, in which you can define a inc procedure or function, it's equivalent of def, and when you declare it, since the compiler knows that something called counter is of type counter, you can call it in three different ways: the command system syntax, the function syntax, and the method syntax. And it will rearrange it. And I think this, along the fact that you have procedure overloading, so you don't have to come up with a different name for a function that does something when you change the arguments, which is also something that I appreciate a lot, because I have a hard time naming that. So these things and the procedure overloading gives you a lot of the advantages of object-oriented programming without all the difficult part, the inheritance and everything, all the part that are related especially to syntax. And you can always add a function to an object coming from a library, and it will look like a method. And you don't have print, parentheses, print without parentheses, Python 2, Python 3 conversion or anything. Once you have a compiler, you can ask it to do other things. So the compiler is something that can reason about your code and give you other stuff. So in the Python world, we are used to have other tools, linters and checkers and stuff like that. But with a compiler, you can, for example, track side effects. And the compiler is able to check if something that you now call a func and not anymore a proc is something that is without side effects. So it's a language in this way in which you can get closer to some kind of functional languages. You can exercise yourself in the style of functional languages, which is also something that I find very interesting. And then, as I mentioned, the killer feature is metaprogramming, and for me is the equivalent of the magic of Python of import anti-gravity. I mean, one of the first things I remember is the XKCD comic about that, and you had this power that you can just import something, or something that you look and you have access to extreme power. And it's, in a sense, this works like that. So to explain it, the definition is code that generates other code. Let's start with something we are somehow familiar, which are f-string, which is a great feature, I guess the feature that pushed the move to Python 3. And in Nim it would look like this, not f, but fmt. And how this is implemented, it's not actually a language feature. It's something that you implement with metaprogramming. Because in the language, you can have that piece of code that is translated to another piece of code. Metaprogramming in Nim has different sources, but basically you can give him something, static strings, other code, and you can, manipulating the AST, produce something else. Metaprogramming gives other kind of magic, and one of this type of magic is interoperability with Python. And here we are seeing two kinds of magic, one from Nim and one from Python. On the top, you will see in a light gray, not very visible, something which is called the pragma, which has this export py. The rest is standard Nim code, but you import this NimPy library, you annotate the function that you want to use in Python with export.py,
you put in the same folder a Python file, and you install the NIMPorter library, a Python library, so you just have this 6 lines of code, these 2 files in the library and everything installed, of course. And if you run Python code, it's able to call the NIM code without anything. And this, and the part of the Python magic is because NIMPorter is hooking the import hook, and it recognizes and it finds, recognizes this and is able to compile and bind everything. Another thing that I really love about NIM is the fact that you can do interactivity. And this is another example of metaprogramming. So that kind of DSL is in HTML, HTML-like DSL used by a library called Carax, which is sort of a React for Python, that allows you to do interactivity in the front end. And how do you do interactivity in the front end with this language that compiles to native? Because it does not only compile to C, but as mentioned, as spoiled in the beginning, it also compiles to JavaScript, and also in the description. And you have a very easy way to wrap stuff. So this is how my mind went when I saw this, because in a way, as a data scientist, one of the things that I find very important is the user interface, the way that you interact with this complex algorithm that you look at. And so I always suffered about not being able to do that in JavaScript, and maybe not wanting to do that in JavaScript also. This is also a result of wrapping a JavaScript library. So that was what is NIM and why it made me into a better Pythonista. So one very easy way in which you can become, in general, a better programmer once you study your first programming language is to study a second programming language and do something in another programming language, even if you don't plan to use it in production. This helps you broaden your horizon, understanding things, and maybe do something in also another domain. And so it helped me understand what a type system is. There are different type systems, how to go into functional programming, reason more about mutability, which is also baked in. And this is one way it changed me. One thing I want to tell you is why I was attracted by this kind of language. And there are 3 things that I think that they share, Python and NIM. One is it is very accessible, and this is a really powerful thing with Python, because being accessible means being appealing to a really wide audience, and part of the success of Python, I think, is due to this. I also find it very playful, and playfulness is important for creativity, for innovation, for discovering things. That's why maybe Python has an important role in data science. And I also like the fact that you can use it pretty much for everything. And once you learn one, you have something accessible and playful, and you can combine things from embedded to high computing, whatever. 3 things instead which are different, and in front I struggle a little with Python, are the fact that you have everything happening at runtime, so you get errors later. And the compiler helps you get find errors before. Then if you want, sometimes you want, you created something with Python and you want to give it to your friend, and it's not that easy. If you compile to native code, you have an executable to give. And the other thing, probably the main thing, is that when you work with Python, you usually work with a high ecosystem, or also reasoning about Python code, the Python object model is not something too easy to reason about, and the systems programming language allows you to get to the bottom of the layer of computing, so it helps you cut through the abstraction. Another very nice thing, very interesting for me, is the fact that NIM is a small programming language with a very niche community. And this, I think, is something that is a great opportunity to motivate you to contribute to something. So one other motivation, you can contribute with other bigger projects, but if you find your own niche community of, it may be NIM, but it may be other programming languages, it's really a great place to motivate you because it gives you ownership. Just to give you an example, something that I participated while interacting with the community was about picking the color of the language on GitHub. I don't know if you know, but there is a repository which records all the hex codes of the color of the language. And Nim had at some point a different color that did not tie too much to the brand. And in that repository in GitHub, there was a particular algorithm that checked that you didn't pick a color too close for other algorithms. So in doing that, I implemented a color, there is a very specific color distance, so you can read more about the forum, and so I implemented the color distance, and we were able to pick one of the colors that was in here, that was close to this. Then the third way, so I mentioned the fact that I improved technically, I improved in terms of motivation. And the third way is that also when you go into another community with all its differences, with all its issues also, you come back with a different perspective on the Python community, which I think is really a great place, and it gives you really a lot of motivation to participate and to put in work to keep this community great. And at some point, I stumbled upon on King's Day speech of Guido, which is one of the first links on his website, and it's a great blog post if you want to get inspired again by the initial Python. So, the open source part, how did it help me to get into open source? And this, I think, it applies to any other kind of thing that, for example, any other language that has a niche community. So in a niche community, in a way, it's easier to do the kind of open source that, as a naive person, I was many years ago, you tend to associate with open source, to create your own library to do something, while then later I realized that there are many, many ways to contribute to open source. But let's say you want to contribute your library, and you have to come up with an idea. But for example, in a niche language with a small ecosystem, there are a lot of untapped ideas, and you can start with something very easy, porting something that is another language to that language, that is useful or fun in another language to that language. Since I kind of liked emoji, one of the first things that I did like 5 years ago, the first library that I created was a library to parse a string and turn emoji codes into emoji. And another way, so a niche community helps with coming up with ideas that you want to do, because in Python, every idea you say, okay, there's something else that has done it. I can contribute to that, but it's not the same thing. So the other thing, you need to code it. And you just initialize with the package manager. You code something. And then one of the other things that I like a lot about Nim, that the publish command is something very, very easy. You type a command and it opens a pull request on a GitHub repo that just adds few lines to a packages.json. Somebody merges that and it's done. And, compared to how instead a little bit more involved is publishing a package with Python, I think it's a good bonus. I haven't yet made the trip to publish a Python package, hopefully soon, but this kind still kinds of scary. So the bigger project that then emoji thing, by the way, is something that I created that in one day on a Saturday, and a few days later, the guy who wrote the initial blog post that I read on Hacker News put me a star, and that filled me with joy, although not that stars are particularly important, but that particular star was very, very important for me. Another project instead that I've worked throughout the years, also with friends, is a project called NimbyBland, and the first thing is I'll show you. I told you that I liked interactivity. So this is a copy of something that I saw on socials of a curve that looks like a fern that you can change the parameters. But this actually HTML page is something that is done with this NIMIB library. And the source code for this is this many lines. You put this many lines of code into the library and you create an HTML page. So it's actually, when you look back, something which is called literate programming. So interweaving, having code and text, code and explanation of the code, and also output of the code that are a tool that helps you put the two together or separate the two. It started with Donald Knuth. And NIMIB takes advantage of how NIMIB syntax is very flexible and takes a different approach from the standard literate programming of Knuth or even the more modern interactive program computing like Jupyter Notebook, which was part of the inspiration of this. So it is a library that you import and you produce an HTML like that. And you can do slides then, because then you can add a different template. And this is also thank you for Hugo, who's a co-maintainer of this library and of this project. And at some point I realized, maybe I can, it also makes sense with Python. And so I have this project which I've started working on and it's not yet published, but it tries to do the same thing as a Python library. And it makes much less sense than with NIM, but it still makes sense. So it's something that I plan to publish. And this is something that there is a repo. And it works like that. It does exactly the same thing. You have something, a code, a text cell, and a code block, and it creates the code block, and it captures the output. And something else I've started experimenting is to integrate it with PyScript, because which is also a project I like a lot, and we will have a talk later this afternoon about that. And there is a way to interact. But this is something that the API is not there. There are a lot of problems. So I think that sums it up. I'm very happy to have done this here in this place. It's my second time at FOSDEM. And thank you for your attention. And if you have questions, happy to answer here.
Thank you, Pietro, for your demonstration. Do you have any question? Yes. Two. Okay.
Thank you. So my question is, how good is the support with bindings? For example, I have a C++ library or a C library, and I want to be able to interface it with NIM.
To use it with NIM, yeah, right. So that part is really, really, really good, the FFI. So, because it's very, very easy to use a library. So I showed you the interoperability with Python, but basically, for example, you have a C++ library, you annotate it with something that would be import CPP, and you can use it basically right away. Then there are also projects that automate the wrapping, especially with C++ Python, has been a lot of work. One of the most notable projects is Juan Gomez, who is working on a wrapper of the Unreal Engine and has really also smoothed out a lot the experience of accessing to all kinds of C++ library. Unreal Engine is a game engine, very big C++ project. And so lots of projects there to do that.
Performance-wise, how does it compare with, for example, Golang, which I assume is in the same class?
NIM, well, it depends, but NIM tends to be in the same class as Rust and Zig. So you don't have a floor. It started with a GC, now it has a ref counting, so the memory management is something which injects initializer and destructor. You can also use it without nothing happening at runtime, and you'll have to manage pointers for references with cyclic stuff. But there is no bottom at the type of performance that you can reach. And the expressivity makes it so that sometimes you can reach in an easier way, faster speeds. So there are projects that Mami Ratzimbafi does project for tensor libraries that have the most incredible speed, or crypto libraries that are used in the Ethereum space. So.
And if it fails, do I get a stack trace or just segmentation fault?
Sorry?
If it fails, do I get a stack trace or segmentation fault?
You should get a stack trace, otherwise it's a compiler bug.
Another question? Ah, yes.
You mentioned portability as an issue with Python, but if NIM is compiled, how good is portability to different operating systems? Or if you have libraries, are they statically linked in a sense that you can ship one executable without dependencies?
So the portability in the sense that you can create an executable, yes. You will usually have the choice to statically compile the libraries or to use dynamic libraries. So in that sense, it's portable. You compile an executable and you pick whatever you want in terms of linking with the library. And in terms of different operating system, it supported all the main one from scratch. And since it compiles to, and it support also other backend targets of different kinds. Yeah, but this is probably where I call in the fact that I'm a data scientist, so I'm not supposed to know this kind of stuff.
Ok, thank you. Thank you
thank
so
you.
Much. Grazie mille, Pietro. Alla prossima.
Alla prossima.